Every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything: data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game. Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Get ready, Ohio. FanDuel, America's number one sports book, is coming to the Buckeye State. And to kick things off, you can get started with $100 in free bets as an early sign-up bonus. Plus, when you sign up today with promo code OhioFD, you'll be all set when FanDuel goes live in Ohio. Then you can bet on all your favorite teams in all your favorite sports with $100 in free bets. Just download FanDuel's top-rated sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Ohio, this is your chance to get in on the action. Join today with promo code OhioFD. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 or older and present in Ohio. Bonus issued in non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after FanDuel accepts its first real money sports wager in Ohio, 1-1-23. Unique user identity verification required. Offer ends on the go live date. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification. And they're satisfying to scratch, no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
At Lowe's, we're your go-to for great gardening values every day. That's why we've lowered our price on select bagged mulch, now starting at just $2.88 a bag. Mulch helps prevent weeds and retains moisture. And when you put it down around trees, shrubs, and flower beds, you'll see how beautiful it makes your outdoor space. Just in time to welcome back family and friends. Shop online and pick up in store. Lowe's, home to the best part of summer. Selection and product availability vary by location. While supplies last, U.S. only. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
All right, it's Film Study with Ken McCusick. I know it's been 2 months since the last episode. The podcast isn't going away. It's just been a little bit of slow period for NFL news. But now it's mid-July. We get to start getting excited for training camp. Ken McCusick, how you doing?
Life's good, Josh. How about you?
I'm doing well. I moved down to Florida during our hiatus.
Well, we appreciate you timing your new job and your new opportunity in life. And frankly, you're probably your new life, because it sounds like a great, great opportunity for you, by timing it up in the NFL dead period. Thank you very much for that. During the season, been very disruptive. And you know, right, it's all about us.
Right. It was all about timing in this podcast and finding the time that the Orioles suck, so I don't have to worry too much about being at Camden Yards.
You know what? You're going to miss out on the pro debut of Adley Rutschman, which is apparently going to happen at Aberdeen now, I'm hearing.
Yeah, it's supposed to be this week or next week. I will miss out on that. But whenever the Orioles, I'll be coming up often. Family's still up there, so I'll be coming up often, for especially for Oriole games once they start to get a little better.
All right, so this podcast is about identifying what's happening going into Ravens camp and what are some of the significant battles, and do a little roster handicapping as we go. And please join in with us, and we hope you, as always, although you won't hear this episode until it's done, before our episodes, give us a question. You can tag it Poundstein Film Study Mailbag. Have a comment, that's fine as well. We'll try and air every single one, and Josh will kind of weave these in as we work through as we see them on Twitter. But we did want to talk. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Josh.
Well, for one, it's a hashtag, not a pound sign. But let's also welcome Michael Crawford into the conversation, because you guys are going to be the ones that get really deep into this training camp preview.
Hey, thanks, Josh and Ken, guys. I appreciate you guys having me on as usual again. And big thanks. Just want to echo what Ken said. Big thank you to Josh for still, you know, doing this despite, you know, a really significant move. And, you know, I know that's got to be tough. So hope it's all going well, and I appreciate you still doing this.
You guys make it this big deal that we're doing it from Florida to Maryland. We've never been in the same room together doing a podcast. We always do it over the internet, so it doesn't really matter where I'm at.
That's true. I have been to your house for the 336 podcast, but you're right. We've never done the Ravens podcast from there.
No, it's right. More the life change. It's more the life change thing, right? Not necessarily that, you know, we got to be in the same place to do it.
All right. Well, the life change is still in the middle, as I'm in a hotel and my family's still back in Maryland. But yeah, podcast will continue. It's nice. Football season, and we can't delay anymore.
Nice. All right. So along those lines, let's jump in right to the first thing that comes to mind in camp, which is the battles involved. We certainly have some on the Ravens this year. And in particular, I think at the heart of those are the fourth-year players, Michael, because those non-star fourth-year players are always coming to camp with their job on the line. They are out of option value, and particularly, you know, non-star, I'm talking about guys who are not going to contribute to the comp formula. So there are several of those on the Ravens right now. You know, Kennedy comes to mind, Maurice Kennedy. Dixon certainly is on the bubble, I think, as a fourth running back. Willie Henry's job may not be in jeopardy, but they have a lot of defensive linemen, and he's been hurt, and you know, he's got to show something to beat out people like McPhee for a job. Cyrus Jones, I think, who was a good punt returner last year, and Alex Lewis, of course, all fourth-year players with jobs on the line.
Yeah, it's that show and prove year for these guys. And, you know, a couple of the names that you mentioned, and you alluded to it as well, they're in position groups where there's a lot of depth already. You know, Kennedy and Cyrus Jones, obviously in that DB group, we know just how deep the Ravens are in that particular position. Running back, you know, they've obviously got some depth now, bringing in Mark Ingram, drafting Justice Hill, and then the O-line. I mean, that left guard position is probably going to be one of the more intriguing, if not maybe the most intriguing camp battle that there is right now. That position doesn't have a clearly defined starter. So not only are these guys in that fourth-year position that you highlighted, but they're also in some other sort of uncomfortable, or maybe not uncomfortable is not the right word, but more pressure packed positions in terms of really fighting, not just being in that fourth year position, but the depth in their particular position group.
Yeah, very, very much so. And it's depth that causes those players without option value to be in trouble. So we'll see. I mean, where you don't have depth, you can't afford to let a fourth-year guy go. But where you do have depth, you have to make a decision, and that's where it was. I think we're at a point right now where we can look back at that 2016 draft and start to appreciate just how good it was. Obviously, they got Ronnie Stanley in the first round, couple blown picks in rounds two and three with Correa and Kafusi. But then also in round four, they picked five guys. Tavon Young, who's already extended long-term. Chris Moore, who's been an enormous special teams player for them and has shown some value. Alex Lewis, who has started off and on for this team, but is still yet to prove himself and worthy of one specific position. Willie Henry, who's been good when he's played. We'll talk a little bit about that. And, of course, Kenneth Dixon, who seemed to rebound in year three and be a fairly significant back. So a pretty exciting draft, and we're not even talking about Matthew Judon, who they got in the fifth round.
Yeah, I mean, when you really unpack it and break it down the way you just did, and, you know, obviously Ronnie Stanley is a star, in my opinion, in this league at left tackle. Tavon just signed a big contract. Judon is kind of on the precipice of maybe the kind of deal that we just saw Za'Darius Smith get, you know, if he has that kind of year this season. And then all those other guys, I don't want to, you know, give them any short shrift either. They're all contributors. So if you look at that draft class and you look at, you've got solid starters beyond that with Ronnie Stanley, an actual star, in my opinion, in this league. And then a bunch of other really solid contributors in different roles and different rotational situations. I mean, I think any team, any GM would look back at that as a success.
Yeah, it's an A draft. I mean, they do really have three stars in the group because Tavon, Judon, and Stanley are all players who, you know, are very solid plus starters in this league. And then the rest of the guys, you know, we're talking about good rotational players. We'll talk about some of them a little bit later in the show. But anyway, some of those guys, even from that fourth round, are now on the verge and need to really earn their job again, prove themselves again, as happens in the NFL. And we want to talk about that, but I think we're going to start going through the battles position by position, if that's okay, Michael. And let's start with quarterback. And why don't you start us off and just talk about where you see that landing?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the sort of unquestioned situation, Lamar is obviously the clearly defined starter going into this season. They brought RG3 back again to back him up. Obviously, that was a priority for them, I think, to get him in particular back, not just because of the style of offense that they run. That's an important point, obviously. But I think they also see some mentorship value with him in terms of a guy who has a very similar playing style to Lamar and has been through some things in this league, you know, not all of them positive. Obviously, he started out on one end of the spectrum and you know, had injuries and issues like that, sort of took him to the other end of the spectrum. So I think that's kind of a valuable thing that they see in the locker room, too. But Trace McSorley, then that leaves Trace McSorley. And I think that's really where the discussion point really is with the quarterback group is, do they keep a third quarterback? Do they keep a guy who I actually think he's you know, a decent quarterback prospect? I know, you know, there's other opinions out there and other people who maybe don't quite see him that way, see him maybe more as a runner more than a thrower, more of a gadget kind of player. And I'm certainly not going to say that, you know, he doesn't have some of those attributes. But I think that there's a possibility to find a role for him. I say possibility because, and I know we'll get into this, but there's going to be some real depth challenges at other positions. There's so many good players who can contribute in a lot of different ways that it's going to be tough. But you've got a guy who's, you know, got some unique abilities at the quarterback position, right? A guy who's mobile, who can run, who can maybe do some things on special teams, can certainly give you some gadget value. But there's got to be an offset with that, right? How much value do you place on something like that as opposed to having to maybe not keep a wide receiver or a DB, you know? So that's something that's going to have to play out as they go into training camp.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at this, I think there are a couple things going on. And you mentioned this really, but I'm going to put it in numbers differently. I think There are about 22 spots that I think are pretty surely assigned to the offense, and I can get to 24 pretty easily by adding a couple guys on the margin. But I think this is really a year where the Ravens are going to keep, because of all their defensive depth, are probably going to keep 26 defensive players and drive most of their special teams value from there. And one of the important things I see coming up in camp is that McSorley proves his versatility beyond just his ability, obviously, to play quarterback and be decent. And he'll get plenty of second half playing time there. But I want to see him play special teams well. I want to see him be a receiver and try and create some of these slash opportunities for himself. But the special teams role he can carve out, very important. If they decide he's not going to be a special teams player, well, maybe they decided he's going to make it, but more than likely it reduces his chance to make the team because they really do need players there. And I think if you're going to have one extra offensive player make it, it better be a special teams contributor. And a player, when you look at the running backs, and we'll just move on to them kind of seamlessly here, Ken Dixon is one of those fourth-year players who is on the bubble. Ingram, Edwards, Hill, I think all sure to make the team. But Ken Dixon is not a special teams player, and that is something that rates against him.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting for him, because I agree with you that Ingram, Edwards, and Hill are probably all pretty safe. Obviously, barring injury, that's the only reason I say probably, not because of ability or anything like that, but barring injury. But so Dixon, and then you could throw in some of these other guys that are in the mix, a DeLance Turner, a Tyler Irvin. You know, those guys are sort of in that mix with Kenneth Dixon for maybe that fourth spot. And again, that fourth running back spot, if they decide to do that, it gets back to special teams value. Right. If you're going to do that, if you're going to keep that fourth running back, that guy's going to have to contribute on special teams in some way. And maybe the leader in the clubhouse, so to speak, with that ability, from what we heard in OTAs and minicamp, might be Tyler Irvin, because he's got some punt return slash kick return ability that, you know, obviously Dixon has not played special teams, I don't believe, in his career in the NFL. And then DeLance Turner, I think, did a little bit in the preseason last year. So he may have some ability there, too. But it's going to be interesting, right, because Dixon has got that uphill climb. He's got some of his, you know, off the field challenges that he's had in the past. And he's sort of been in John Harbaugh's doghouse at various points in time. So he's also sort of got that track record. But just in terms, I've said this before on Twitter, just in terms of, if you could isolate it to just running ability, and obviously you can't, because a running back has to do a variety of things, but just for purpose of this discussion, if you isolated it just to running ability, I think he's the most talented runner that they have of their group of running backs. But as we know, there's more to playing that position and all the different things that you have to be able to do to fulfill different roles on the team from that position to just being a good runner. So it's going to take more than that.
Right. Receiving, blocking, all of those, the ability to do those things are very important, obviously. But Edwards is a guy who covered kicks last year. And in fact, he scored a touchdown, scored the 2-point conversion, and then went in to cover a kick in one of the games last year. And I forget which one it was. It might have been Cincinnati on the tying touchdown. I'm forgetting exactly which game it was. I've watched them. They blurred together a little bit. But I don't see them as using him as much on special teams if he's going to be the kind of bell cow they expect him to be. Justice Hill, you know, a little bit smaller guy, but certainly capable of playing special teams, definitely has the speed for it. So I think they'll try and get him, you know, working there. So I think that, you know, a real question exists as to whether you have the space for Dixon, whether he can prove himself enough as a pass blocker in particular, such that his receiving value can be felt on some of those passing downs.
Yeah, and you've mentioned this other point too. In addition to that, how important those other roles are beyond just running. If you look back at 2018, some of the injuries that they had at the running back position, and how guys like Gus Edwards, DeLance Turner, you know, the UDFA guys, all got a shot with snaps in games. You know, not just in the preseason. So I think when you brought that up, that's a really good point. That that's something that you got to keep in your mind as well with this running back competition.
Yeah, and maybe that's a point for Tyler Irvin, is that, depending on what he shows in camp, he could be, who was the guy, Mazzell, that they lost?
Yeah, Smoke Mazzell.
Yeah, I want to call him Vinegar Ben, but that's an old pitcher. But Smoke Mizell, that's right. But anyway, they lost him, but they did do a good job last year of stashing their guys on the practice squad and bringing them up as needed. And one thing I'll say about Roman's offenses is they've always been pretty good at plugging in a style of running back and making that work within his scheme. And, you know, certainly with Edwards last year, I mean, I really respect what Edwards did, but I think that Edwards, in terms of his physical ability and whatnot, is a fairly average big NFL back. And he, you know, what the results he produced within the scheme, I think, were absolutely terrific.
Yeah, that's a really good point about sort of horses for courses, right, in terms of roles for particular running backs within that scheme. So, you know, you have guys who are a little bit better in gap schemes, you know, on concepts like power or counter. And then you have guys who are a little bit better in zone scheme. So in the outside zone or the inside zone scheme. So, I mean, obviously, guys are going to be able to do both, and you're going to mix and match them that way, because you certainly don't want to create, you know, too strong of a tendency one way or the other. We're like, oh, when this guy's in the game and we think it's a run, we know it's going to be a zone because he's a zone guy. I mean, obviously, they're not going to go to that extreme. But I do think I've seen that in some of my study, looking back at Greg Roman, not just with the Ravens, but going back to Buffalo, going back to San Francisco, that I think he does do a pretty good job of, you know, finding what a guy's strengths are in terms of you know, what he can do in different run concepts, and then putting him in position to kind of maximize those strengths. And then, you know, sometimes, look, you just get a guy like Frank Gore who can do it all, right? Going back to San Francisco. But I think this year what we see with the Ravens is, you know, sort of that running back by committee approach, and guys who bring sort of complementary skill sets. And I think that's something that point will probably come up again once we get into wide receivers.
Yeah. Okay. So let's move on, if we can, to probably the easiest group to handicap, which is the tight ends. And the Ravens have three returning guys: Boyle, Andrews, and Hurst. Boyle, they signed to a big contract, of course. Andrews and Hurst still in their second year, so they have the youth they would like at the position. They have some of the veteran quality with Boyle. Cole Herdman and Charles Scarf are at best long shots to make this roster. They probably get there only via injury. Probably one is a good practice squad candidate. But you know, I think the more interesting question for this year is going to be, if they keep these three guys as tight ends, how do you see the snaps being divided among those three?
Yeah, we talked a little bit about that pre-show, and I do think that's the most interesting point, because, you know, like you covered it already. It's those guys are pretty clearly defined as the three guys that they're going to go with at tight end. And, you know, because of how much Greg Roman uses tight ends in his offense, I think, you know, they're going to see a lot of snaps. I guess if I had to handicap it right now, I probably lean towards Nick Boyle, only because of his prowess as a blocker. Right. I mean, he obviously can leak out into the flat and sort of catch a dump off or over the middle, a check down, that kind of thing. But because they want to run the ball, I mean, we know that this is their MO. This is how they want to play. I think he may sort of be the leader in the clubhouse in terms of my handicapping it, and in terms of who might see the most snaps because of that blocking prowess. But, you know, Mark Andrews, Hayden Hurst, I would expect them both to take some steps forward as blockers this year. I think Mark Andrews really, you know, did a nice job, is probably too light of a word, a really good job in terms of a receiver last year, and a guy who could actually create some mismatches, stretch the field a little bit, get downfield and make some big plays. Hayden Hurst, I think, you know, started to come on a little bit late towards the end of last season. Obviously, he was recovering from the foot injury, a pretty significant thing. I mean, I think anytime you got to get screws put in your foot, you know, it's going to, as a football player, it's going to impact you on the field. So I think, you know, you have to kind of have that in the background when you think about his rookie season. So I expect some improvement from both of those guys in terms of blocking, but I would expect them to be more of the sort of matchup, obviously, you know, receiving threat kind of tight ends. But yeah, I'd lean towards Nick probably seeing the bulk of the snaps just because he's such a darn good blocker.
Well, you're handicapping certainly goes along with what it was down the stretch. So in Lamar's starts, Boyle outsnapped the other two guys by a significant amount, even though Andrews proved himself to be a very valuable receiver down the stretch. Good catch radius for Lamar, which I think was important during that stretch when we saw John Brown you know, having a lot of difficulties as a receiver, other people having difficulties as well, frankly. Andrews was the one guy who really played very well during the Lamar stretch run and of excellent play. I hope the Ravens don't try and make Andrews into something he's not. You know, if he really is a flex tight end primarily, if he's really Todd Heap and he's not really a particularly great blocker, well, there's no need to use him like that. He has tremendous opportunity to flex, and flexing is very valuable in terms of that mismatch you create, because you put extra tight ends on the field, the other team is more likely to keep their base defense in as opposed to the nickel and not have a cornerback to cover what ends up being a slot receiver at tight end. Because remember, they have to make their choice before the play on what defenders they want.
Absolutely. And I agree. I agree with you 100% on that. I hope they don't do that either, because I think that is really where he excels. I mean, I want to give him credit, because I think that, you know, he takes pride in blocking and wanting to improve his blocking. So I don't want to take anything away from that. But he's, you know, a big wide receiver, really, in a lot of ways. I mean, he has that ability. He's talented in that way. Really good hands. Does a good job with route running, does a good job with getting open at the top of his routes. You know, a little bit of a mismatch in terms of having some separation quickness. I mean, I don't, you know, he's not going to, you know, run like a 4.4 or anything like that and just run away from guys at times, but he can, you know, get downfield. We saw that a couple times last year. So I'm with you 100% on that. I hope that they continue to use him that way.
It's going to be a great battle for snaps. And I think this is a place, as we saw on defense, where rest really worked wonders in providing late game value for the defense. I think we could see some of that on the offense too, with Hurst and Andrews and Boyle all alternating some snaps. And there'll be a lot of temptation to use two or three of them on some plays, but there's also there's real opportunity here to have rested players. And, you know, between the two of them, I would not expect that they would have as many as two snaps per offensive play. Mm-hmm. So that gives you an idea. Nobody's going to play. Well, OK, somebody might play 2/3 of the snaps and it'd probably be Boyle. But in general, they're not going to be playing all that many snaps in a game. They should be pretty well rested. We're not talking Rob Gronkowski here in terms of leaning on these players.
Absolutely.
All right. So we seem pretty excited about, I think, the quarterback position, because I know both you and I are hoping for big things from Lamar this year. Improvements, certainly. The running backs, where the Ravens have some depth in the tight ends. Let's talk about the wide receivers, because I think this is an interesting position where the Ravens have a lot of different types of players. And so if you'll indulge me here, I'm going to define these players, and then we can talk about each of the Ken groups, if you want to call it that.
Okay.
They have three locks, I think, really at the top of the group, and that's all I really see of true roster locks at the top of the wide receiver groups. And that's Snead, Hollywood Brown, and Boykin. They're all going to make it. You know, again, this is barring injury. Snead, their leading receiver last year. Brown, obviously, this first round draft pick. If he didn't make the team, if there is an injury consideration for him this year, that would be very bad. And Boykin, because he's their most obvious outside quality receiver with the right size fit for that. So those are my three roster locks. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I tend to agree with those three. Obviously, Snead showed how valuable he was to the passing game last year and what he can do over the middle and from the slot. Hollywood Brown's a first round pick, enough said there. And Miles Boykin, even though I know we'll talk about some other guys that they have in terms of big bodies at the wide receiver position, whether that's Michael Floyd or even Antoine Wesley or Quincy Adeboye, Jalen Smith, you know, go on down the list. But Miles Boykin, not only a draft pick, not only a big body, but probably the fastest maybe of that other group of big body guys. So you get that combination of size and speed on the outside that, you know, you really are looking for to take advantage of. Sometimes you get those mismatches out there at corner, where, not that the corner is small, you know, maybe he's a 5'11 kind of guy, maybe he's 190 pounds or so. And then you get a big, fast guy like Boykin out there, and you probably like your chances.
Yeah, a lot of opportunity with a player like that to draw some double coverage. You know, the best way to handle a big body is often to bracket him. Yep. You know, if you go high low on him, you got the better chance. But that, of course, you know, takes a man out of the box, takes a man out of the running game equation. That's just what the Ravens should be looking to do. Moving on, there's one guy that I think most people have him as a roster lock. And Chris Moore certainly proved to be very valuable throughout his first 3 years of the Ravens. Scoop and score Moore. He's been a great special teams player. he's had a really showed a great catch radius and a good catch percentage last year. I think he might have been up at 75% or 80% for the year. And you know, that was something that the Ravens did not have a lot of across the board, particularly in their wide receivers. Often running backs are at that level or higher, but that's not common for receivers. And Moore showed a lot of reach back ability and good catch radius. He's got undeniable value. A lot of people expect him to play on the outside, get more time this year, and I would hope so. But he's also in his fourth year, and so there's going to be questions if they like a couple rookies more that they're going to want to continue to stay young at the position. And I think it's really borderline whether or not Chris Moore would be a guy who would contribute to the comp formula after the 2019 season also.
Yeah, he's a guy who I really like, have really liked from the time that they drafted him. And I tend to put him more in the lock column than not, but the fourth year point that you make is a very strong one. Obviously we talked about that, at the top, but I think the other thing about him is, you know, the special teams contributions and what he's done there is undeniable. And that value is well established. So, you know, not disputing that at all. What he's done as a wide receiver, I think what we've seen are flashes. Right. And I think even people that like him, even people that really pull for him and root for him, I think even they sort of want to see more. I think there's just this feeling that, man, we want to see more. People talk about a breakout. You know, you said last year, this is going to be Chris Moore's breakout year. And then going into this year, now this is going to be the year. And then, you know, it kind of sort of doesn't live up to the expectation. And people will say, well, he didn't get the opportunities. They could have done more to give him chances. Look, all of that is in the equation. All those variables are in the equation with him. But as you know, at a certain point, you know, it's just either got to happen or it's not. And particularly when you're a guy in the fourth year like he is, you really got to come out and take this thing by the reins, right? And you just got to make it happen. So I hope it does because I'm a big Chris Moore fan. But I definitely can see that other side of the argument where maybe it's not as clear cut as you might think.
Right. That unfortunately is where I am. I wish it were clear cut. Moore was another thing about him as a receiver. And this goes to what you said is that he was on the field for a lot of snaps for the number of targets he got last year. Although he caught a high percentage of his targets, he didn't, you know, there's not the evidence of regular separation that you would hope for in a receiver. And, you know, I know that the Ravens did run the ball a lot. I do not have a separation by pass play and run play of what he was on the field for, but, you know, it is something we'd like to see more. Anyway, let's move on here. Cause we need to move a little quick here, but veteran choices, they have two guys who are in. I don't think they'll both make it, but Seth Roberts and Michael Floyd, each provides potential outside receiver value and some veteran stability there. Seth Roberts, you know, had played well at Oakland. Floyd has played well in the past at Arizona. You know, both of them kind of at a crossroads in their career at this point.
Yeah, I that was a tough one for me between these two. I think I kind of work backwards, I guess. So both guys, I don't think have done a lot on special teams throughout their career. I remember checking Seth Roberts. He had some limited snaps throughout his career in Oakland. Michael Floyd, I'm not sure that he's ever played on special teams.
Well, his body type, you wouldn't normally.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, when you're talking about maybe that fifth or sixth wide receiver spot, special teams, obviously very important. So you've got that to factor in as well. But Roberts, pretty solid number three receiver, I think, out there in Oakland for some of his time, going back to when Crabtree was there, when Amari Cooper was there. So pretty solid number three guy, could work out of the slot, could work outside. Like you said, has solid size, you know, had pretty dependable hands, I think. I think he had a year there once where he had maybe 10 drops or so, but you know, my position about drops, you gotta add context there. You can't just look at raw drop numbers, but I think pretty solid as a number three guy. And then Michael Floyd, I mean, when he first came into the league, this guy looked like he was going to be a legitimate, maybe number one type of receiver. out there in Arizona. I think he had at least 1,000 yard season, maybe another one, but looked like that kind of guy. And then, you know, had some off the field issues, had some injuries, and things have kind of gone the other way. But I probably lean a little bit more towards Seth Roberts between the two of them. But we'll see. I mean, this is what training camp is all about, you know, and this is what coaches always say is, you know, the competition will sort these things out. So, you know, we'll be keeping an eye on that.
And injuries, of course, also possibly as well.
Yes.
I'm just going to handicap it for you, and you can agree or disagree, Michael, but I'm going to say there's probably a 25% chance both make it, maybe 60% chance that one of the two makes it. And I don't think it's decided yet. And
no.
Then the rest being about 15% that neither makes it.
Yeah, I think those are fair odds. I definitely lean towards one of them making it, being the higher proposition than both of them making it.
Okay, well, let's move on, because the next set of guys, the next pair of guys, I'm sorry, Josh, did we have a question related to that?
No, you're good.
Okay, thanks. So we have a couple players coming into their second year. Neither of them has played an NFL snap yet. Jaleel Scott spent the entire year on IR. Lastly, I think important for developmental purposes, was on the roster for the entire season, but never was activated on game day. He was a game day deactivation. Lasley's obviously taken the time to work with Lamar this offseason to a good degree. I don't know about Scott. Lasley's been more vocal about it on social media. You know, those are two guys who camp couldn't be more critical in terms of beating out some of these other UDFA guys who, frankly, shouldn't be behind them in any significant way. They both signed for 3 years from now. And each, you know, the UDFA guys, in fact, have an extra year as an RFA at the end of that, where the Ravens have some frictional value they can derive. So, you know, at this point, you know, those guys also were Aussie draft picks, and we don't know how much they were DaCosta's guys. So I question, you know, how that will play out. But where do you see those two guys?
Yeah, this is an interesting one, because, correct me if I'm wrong, both of these guys were taken no later than the fifth round, right?
Four and five.
Yeah. So, I mean, to be in year two, you know, with that kind of draft, you know, position, and to, you know, really, I don't think it's a stretch to say that these guys are on the bubble. That's not something that you see often, particularly in a group where there maybe isn't a ton of like clear cut starters. I mean, we talked about Snead and Brown and Boykin. I mean, Snead obviously, but Brown and Boykin, it's really because of draft slot, right? They haven't played yet. So for Lasley and Scott to be where they are is maybe something that I don't think you see a lot around the league, particularly with, you know, how prevalent passing is now. But look, there's the whole drumbeat issue with Jaleel Scott, right? If you go back to the mini camps and the OTAs, and about how he looked, and, you know, sort of, you know, turning the corner a little bit, or not looking like the stage was too big for him, and really showing a lot of improvement. Those drum beats are always interesting to me, because you hear them throughout the offseason, and hopefully that carries over into training camp and into the preseason, because sometimes there's something there. Sometimes when you kind of hear that consistent drum beat about a player getting better, improving, if it's consistent throughout all of those phases of the preseason, sometimes it really is fire and not just smoke, but we'll see. Lastly, I couldn't agree with you more about the developmental value of being able to run on the scout team and go against, you know, the Ravens DBs and really still work in the offense and catch passes from Lamar and continue to kind of develop that timing and rapport, and then what they've done in the offseason. So, you know, all of that points in the right direction, has the arrow pointing in the right direction, but now we need to see it in training camp with the pads on, with the veterans in preseason games, right? We need to see the product, the outcome of all of these sort of positive reports that we're hearing. So the opportunity is there for both of these guys, I think, to, you know, seize a spot. Now, this is I'd be interested to get your take on this. We handicap those last two guys. How would you handicap this? Do you think that it's more likely that both of these guys make it than what we did with Floyd and Roberts, or do you think it's kind of a similar situation?
No, I think one of them makes it and one of them probably doesn't, would be my guess. I, I, You know, it's an interesting group because Lasley is clearly got the more experience and probably the better rapport with Lamar, seems to be more in touch with what the Ravens want him to do. Jaleel Scott, by far the better physical specimen. Yeah. You know, you know, being a tall guy at wide receiver, you can't make up for that. And the Ravens need outside guys. They don't need, you know, more slot ponies, as we'll call them. They've got quite a few possibilities for that position. It's kind of like having a bunch of nickel corners and not having guys who have the length to play on the outside. It's not exactly what you want. So anyway, I would think one of them would make it. And I think the set of rookie hopefuls is probably stronger than it's been in past years. I'm always question myself when I say that, because we've been through so many situations with Butler and other people who just, there's no way they're going to be cut. And of course they're cut, but it may be another case where at least they can build themselves a strong practice squad from among Wesley, Jalen Smith, Quincy Adeboyjo. Quincy's actually running out of time. He's in year three right now. So I think that right there, his size keeps him in the race there, but Jalen Smith and Antoine Wesley are also both bigger physical receivers who could play on the outside. You'd like to have some depth there, particularly if things aren't working out with Boykin or with one of the veterans they keep with Floyd or Roberts. So, you know, there is going to be pressure to keep them, whether it's maybe Scott as well. I think one of those guys may make the team, and, you know, one other may be on the practice squad.
Okay. I know we want to get on to O-line, so I won't go too much into the UDFAs. I think you hit on those guys pretty well. But Antoine Wesley is the guy that I'll be keeping my eye on, a guy I spent a little time watching during the pre-draft process. Kind of intriguing skill set for a big guy. So I'll be keeping my eye on him.
Well, let's make sure to the extent we do some preseason episodes, and I'm going to keep the podcast going week after week. I don't know on what kind of abbreviated form, but hopefully we can have some interchange on what we're seeing out of those young receivers during the preseason. I think that's the real test. There are so few padded practices now. Those four preseason games plus the two pre-game practices they have against the other team. You know, like last year it was the Colts. Those represent a substantial portion of their total padded practice time. And, you know, it's all of the really hit you where you don't want to be hit practice time, because they have very stringent rules about how they hit each other in practice.
So, yeah, absolutely. That's going to be big for those guys. That's a great point. That's a point that I don't think that we talk about enough with rookies ever since the new CBA was renegotiated. How, you know, I know I've tweeted about this before. I don't want to belabor it, but basically I think it was the Rams who did a study that there are half the number of padded practices now under the new CBA. It basically takes a rookie 3 years to get the same number of padded practices that they got in 1 year under the old CBA. And that just cannot be marginalized in terms of how important that is for development, particularly for wide receivers, because you think about how much timing and precision goes into developing that, you know, with a quarterback. So, I mean, I think that's a huge point.
Right. And the fear of being hit over the middle, or being hit even on the outside, wherever it might be, having that safety coming over and knock the crap out of you on the sideline trying to dislodge that ball. That's an important part of being a wide receiver and understanding how to time your catch, how to secure the football, all the things that go along that we take for granted, other than he's got to get separation, he's got to catch the football. I mean, there's a lot more to it than that. So I agree with you completely. And let's move on to the offensive line, because we've got a lot of exciting things to talk about here. Stanley Skura, Yanda Brown, they all appear set to start to me. Now, I know a lot of people have been talking negatively about Skura, and I also know that you and I both think more positively of him than the bulk of people. I think his run blocking in particular has been undervalued, and some of the way he's able to secure a pass block when he's left, or pass or run block, frankly, when he's left behind from an initial double. So we talked about Yanda's bailout blocks to help the right tackle, where Skura's often left one-on-one with a defensive tackle. I think he's done pretty well. And also, whenever they've done these multiple inside double teams, I think Skura's been a very important component of that. One more thing about Skura, I have to say this. He's got much better footwork than past centers the Ravens have had. I watched Creed Humphrey play at Oklahoma, and he was tripping up powers a fair amount. And then I've been watching the 2006 season, this offseason, we're scoring that. And Mike Flynn is just a mess in terms of his footwork, and he's in the second to last year of a long NFL career, but He steps on Bowler's foot. He trips up the left guard. And we just didn't see that kind of problem from Skura last year. There's other, you know, he's got an imperfect anchor. No one's gonna claim that he's got a perfect anchor, but he has good footwork for a center.
Yeah, we've talked about it. We both are higher on Skura than probably the average fan out there. I mean, look, the guy played every offensive snap last year. I mean, durability goes a long way at any position, but particularly on the offensive line. I couldn't agree with you more about his mobility and footwork. I think that those are his strengths. I think throw in, you know, how he uses his hand placement right in there with those other two things are really strengths for him. Look, he's going up against some behemoths at defensive tackle in the AFC North, right? So it's going to be hard for anybody to anchor against those dudes. But it was his first year, right, starting at center, you know, significantly, right, in terms of starting a significant number of snaps in games. So I expect him to continue to improve, and I actually think he's a solid guy at center. So, I mean, unfortunately, you know, when you're on the offensive line and maybe center, tackle is probably maybe the only other position where it stands out more. But you know, when it goes bad, it stands out, right? Mm-hmm. It grabs your attention. But when it goes as it's supposed to, when it goes as planned, you don't even notice it. So I think that's right. What happens a lot on the offensive line. It's like when a guy gets run over or bowled backwards or gives up quick pressure, you know, that's what you remember. But you don't remember the other 60 snaps where nothing happened, right? Because he did his job. So I think that's just part of, you know, the anonymity, so to speak, of playing on the offensive line.
Yeah. So aside from those four starters that we just mentioned now, there really is a battle royale where literally every other player who's likely to make the roster, and I'm going to take Greg Sinnott out of this group, but literally every other player is likely to make the roster. Powers, Bozeman, Hurst, Lewis, and Illuminor are all fighting for that left guard spot. I've never seen anything like it in terms of a spot being that up for grabs entering training camp.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun one to watch because, like you said, it could just go in so many different ways with all the different guys who have an opportunity to compete for this position. You know, Hurst has been a guy who's played that position two seasons ago and did it in a really solid way, right? I think coming out of that season, I think a lot of the fan base who maybe was a little bit on the fence about James Hurst, particularly when he was back at tackle, when he moved to guard two seasons ago and really, you know, acquitted himself well, I think people kind of came into 2018 thinking, hey, you know, maybe we've got this thing sorted out. But then he dealt with injuries and, you know, had some other issues. And then we just sort of saw a revolving door, right? Alex Lewis sort of got his opportunity, and he's consistently dealt with injuries throughout his short career, unfortunately, because he seems like a talented guy and seems like a guy who at least – Coach D'Alessandro seems to really like. I know he's got that connection with his dad, but he seems to be the kind of guy that he likes, a guy who wants to do it the way you're coaching him to do it. And I know I've seen him talk about that and particularly mention Alex Lewis at a clinic. And Illuminor is a guy that I'm probably higher on than a lot of people. I don't think a lot of people, maybe people sort of see him in the same way that they saw Hurst before that 2017 season. But I think that when he got snaps at left tackle this year, and I know we're talking about left guard, but when he got snaps at left tackle, I thought he acquitted himself really well. I mean, it wasn't perfect. It's never going to be perfect on the O-line, but a guy who had played tackle in college and then came into the NFL and played guard, and then I don't think that he played tackle in any games in 2017. Maybe he did it in practice, but I don't think he did it in any games in 2017.
I'm not aware either. 89 scored snaps at tackle. So I don't want to go overboard on – get real effusive, because he ended up only having one game where it was enough snaps, which I have a 20 snap minimum, to get a grade. But in 89 scored snaps, he had a .82 raw score, and that included the major deductions being two penalties against Pittsburgh. So I'm very optimistic that we got finally a swing guy who can actually play guard and tackle. And I think it's just the icing on the cake for this whole battle royale to have Illuminor being getting the first team snaps in the OTAs. And, you know, first of all, you hear all about Powers in the draft, and I'm sure Powers will get his chance to win the job here. And Illuminor is starting first, and Harbaugh is saying Hurst is the starter if we start today, but he's just saying that, you know, it's coach speak in some way. And you have Lewis, who's had this spot the most before, but, you know, he's hurt, and he's honestly in the, I think, the most likely of that group to actually be cut. And then you have who am I missing here? Bozeman, who is as secure as a backup as you could be because he's had all that time at center in last year's preseason. And I thought played very well at left guard last year in relatively limited opportunities. But I look at it, it's not that limited. It's 230 scored snaps last year. That's pretty significant.
Yeah.
You made the point. He didn't take any Ascura snaps. They were all at left guard.
Yeah, I'm right there with you on Bozeman. I actually thought he did a really solid job in those snaps when he was at left guard. But I know that you scored him. So let me ask you, because I heard this from Jeff Zrebeck, who you know writes for The Athletic now. He was talking about this left guard sort of battle and mentioned all those other names, but left out Bozeman. So, you know, this was on Twitter. So I, you know, sort of tweeted him back and said, hey, what about Bradley Bozeman? And he said, hey, yeah, he's probably definitely in the mix. It wasn't an intentional omission. But he said, from what I hear from the coaches, he's on the ground too much. So I hadn't really noticed that when I was watching him. So I wanted to see if that was something that maybe stood out to you or that you noticed when you were scoring him.
Okay. It is it's a major consideration for missed blocks if the guy goes to the ground. So it would fall into my missed block category if it doesn't fall into a worse category. Okay. So it could be a pressure is because of it. It could be a quarterback hit. But also, because I very much believe in winning ugly at the NFL level, so this is a difference maybe between college scouting and pro scoring, is at the NFL level, the only thing that matters is if you're able to get it done against your opponent. Form, I believe, takes a great backseat. At the college level, because of the disparate level of competition and you're trying to project the guy to the pro level, I think form is very important. Okay. So with Bozeman, I have him for 15 missed blocks and 230 snaps, which is a somewhat high percentage for a guard, but not off the charts. What he was good at is he didn't give up a whole lot of any kind of pass rush events until that playoff game. And the playoff game, he got beat for 1 1/3 sacks and half a pressure in only 30 snaps, scored an F in that game. But otherwise, he had one D+, and every other game was an A or a B as far as I scored it. So I'm very positive on what he did on the ground. Too much is just a very interesting comment.
Yeah.
Relative to what I actually saw in his play. 0.82 aggregate score at guard. It was a solid B for the year for him. I thought, even including that nasty playoff appearance where obviously, you know, the Chargers really had the Ravens figured out. I'm not saying in terms of Stanley's footwork or whatever, but just they had two pass rushers who really knew how to exploit that left guard position, and they exploited the hell out of Hurst. And then Bozeman came in the game and they exploited him a little bit too, not as badly, but a little bit.
Yeah, that was a tough game for everybody on the O-line for the better parts of 3.5 to almost four quarters. So it was pretty rough for everybody on the O-line. But yeah, that was an interesting comment from Jeff. I'm definitely going to go back and take another look at Bozeman snaps to see if any of that stood out, because it just didn't, you know, the first time around. I didn't really notice it, but maybe I wasn't focusing on it enough. So I'll definitely go back and take a look at that. But yeah, this overall competition at left guard is really going to be something to watch. And, you know, I know we mentioned his name. Obviously, he's a draft pick. We're not going to not talk about Ben Powers. But, you know, he's going to get his opportunity to get a look in there as well. So it's one of those positions where I know, you know, when we maybe get to the defensive show, we'll talk about this and we talk about how much depth they have at defensive back. But just in terms of NFL, you know, starter to solid starters, maybe replacement level player, they've got a solid group of guys here on the offensive line.
Yeah, there's plenty of talent here to have one of them emerge as a good left guard, you know, an NFL average left guard. You know, Yanda got to make sure a player at his age, you know, you have a replacement. And frankly, a lot of the preseason battle at left guard is going to occur at right guard. Yes. Because you can't get everybody in at left guard. They're going to be playing right guard. And exactly. And that may influence some of the things the Ravens do in terms of their left-handedness or right-handedness during the preseason. So we'll be looking for that and trying to see, are they trying to get pulls to the left from right guard just the same way they get pulls to the right? And can they be, you know, a little bit ambidextrous, we'll call it, by having their tight end line up on opposite sides or motion in different ways to get that additional block made. But anyway, I'm looking forward to this preseason. This has got me really going to have this conversation with you, Michael. I'm hoping we can continue throughout the year again. We'll you know, certainly keep up on that. And what the preseason in particular, I think will be fun. Is there Where do you think about 24, 26 offensive players making this roster, and in particular in the offensive line, how many are you seeing?
Well, yeah, that's a good point. You probably have these numbers off the top of your head better than me. What have they done in years past in terms of numbers? Has it been 8 or 9 on the O-line?
Yes, it's usually 8 or 9. And 9 used to be the really common number, and you end up keeping a guy like Brian Rimpf or Hale as the 9th guy. But they've done 8 in recent years a fair amount. And DaCosta even made a comment, forget if it was last camp or it was maybe 2017, when talent was kind of thin. And they had guys like Illuminor and Siragusa who they didn't know they were going to make the roster. So the point that DaCosta made was that maybe you only go with 7 if you really only have 7 and take your chances with the practice squad. Now they went with 8. They kept 8 on the roster, and they have more often than not over the last 3 to 4 seasons. They've had 8 guys. So, you know, if you look at 8 offensive linemen, I think 3 running backs for sure and a 4th is possible. I think 2 quarterbacks for sure, a 3rd is possible. I think 3 tight ends at the only, and I'd say with wide receivers they probably have 6. So 6, 3, 8 is 17, 20. You're at 22, sure thing. And then you've got McSorley, and you've got Dixon, and you've got a 9th offensive lineman, and you've got an extra wide receiver. So those are the extra positions where you could keep on. And I just don't see them keeping 3 out of those 4 things. I think they'll keep 2 out of 4 and keep the extra defender.
Yeah, that extra O lineman is kind of what I'm really looking at right now, because even though we didn't, you mentioned his name, but we spent a lot of time on left guard. Greg Sinnott is the one that's interesting to me in that numbers sort of battle right there, because he's the guy out of, you know, sort of the backup guys or the depth guys who really is a true left tackle. In terms of body type and athleticism, you know, movement skills, he's probably the only other really true left tackle. You've got Illuminor, who we talked about, who can be sort of a guard, swing, tackle kind of guy. I think Hurst, he's done it. I know people will debate his ability to play tackle, but I mean, he's done it functionally in games in the past. So I look at those two guys who have that ability, but again, they're not the pure sort of athletic, mobile, big, you know, big, tall guy, sort of prototypical body type. Now, obviously, he hasn't, been available to see on the field in large number. I mean, he played in the preseason a little, but we didn't see a ton of snaps at him. But that's the one that's the guy who's really interesting to me in that O-line battle, because of sort of his uniqueness at, one of the most coveted positions along the O-line.
Right. It's a great point. And in some ways, Illuminor's success in 2018 at left tackle has probably reduced his chance to come back this year from injury and get the opportunity that he would like to have. I mean, I think we'll see some of Illuminor left tackle in the preseason too.
Oh yeah.
I think it would just be Sinnott, but Sinnott will get quite the look. And I agree. I don't think it's going to ever be optimal to have Orlando Brown move to left tackle. So I think he's going to be the guy there. And I certainly don't think it's optimal to bring Hurst back to tackle on either side. I think it's preferable if Hurst could just focus on one position and trying to be the best guard he can be, and hopefully get over the injuries, which, if they weren't the reason, you know, you got to really think about how long Hurst is going to still be in Baltimore.
True. I didn't even factor that in. I was so hoping that it was injury related, but if it's not, then you got a whole other thing to think about.
Yeah. All right. Well, Josh, how about mailbag questions? Do we have anything this week?
It's pretty thin this week. We do have a couple questions that are maybe a little early to ask. And the first one is from Miggy, who wants to know, as you guys really dug into your offensive line, who would you put in there as backups that aren't going to be the regular starting guys? Is it the guys that are in those battles that will then just get a little bit of playing time?
Yeah, I think we'll each pick one. But to me, Bozeman is the easiest choice for a backup on this team. Now, he could win the left guard thing, but I think he's kind of a long shot to do it. I think he needs to really be focused on what happens if Skura goes down, and try to fight for that center position, get that experience at center in the preseason, and also be the valuable left guard backup on an as-needed basis, just like he was in 18. How about you?
I'm going to go with Powers, just because he's a rookie, and I not to say that he could not win that left guard job, because he could. Anything is possible, but I think he's probably less likely than some of the other guys that we already talked about. So just by nature of that, I'll throw him in that depth category.
All right. And then Garnett is wondering what personnel package would be best for this team based on this offense. And what do you think the pass to run ratio will be?
Okay. See, that is a really hard one to predict this early, but I'm going to say one thing. I think we will see slightly less than two tight ends on the field per play. And I think one of the interesting questions that they're going to have to decide, and we didn't really include that in the discussion here, was Patrick Ricard anywhere and whether or not he fits into a fullback discussion or whether he fits in as the fourth tight end. We really didn't talk about that at all. But if I don't see the Ravens being a two-back set very often unless one of the backs is really a tight end. And Michael, tell me what you think about that, because that really sets up how often the Ravens are going to really have three wide receivers or more on the field.
Yeah, so that I'm with you 100% on that, and I think that's where it really gets into how you define that second back position, because I think they're going to be a 12 personnel team, which is one running back and two tight ends. Mm-hmm. I would expect that to be, and I know the league in general is an 11 personnel league, which is running back and three wide receivers and one tight end. And I'm not saying they're not going to do that. I definitely think that they will. But I think if you just look at the way they're presently constructed, and again, we're doing this early, so based on, you know, where we are right now and how they're presently constructed, I would say that their strengths in terms of receivers, and I'm including tight ends, so not just wide receivers, but receiver mm-hmm. position, would be at the tight end position, right? Because you've got some unproven guys. I mean, talented guys in terms of what we saw them do in college with Hollywood Brown and Boykin, but unproven. So I would expect them to be a 12 personnel team. I think that you know, if they do go into some two back sets, that you'll see a tight end, whether that's Boyle in there as sort of the blocking backs or that H-back hybrid position, or whether they use Hurst or whether they use Andrews, which they did use Hurst. I don't remember seeing them use Andrews a lot out of that position last year, but I know they used Hurst out of that mm-hmm. spot at times. So that's where I would lean today, but that would be counter to what's prevalent in the league. I was just looking at those numbers maybe a week or two ago, and 11 personnel still rules the day in the NFL.
You know, here's the interesting thing about this, and I think this really speaks to some of the opportunity with Greg Roman's offense, is that other teams in the NFL are looking to force the nickel with three wide receivers because they love to run against that nickel. They love to run against the six in the box, look, having lighter defenses on the field, try and win the line of scrimmage, and try and just do it with one back and not a fullback. And the Ravens want to force the standard, want to force the base defense, because they have all sorts of opportunities to get mismatches with both Hurst and Andrews flexed out wide. So if you put two tight ends in the game, it could mean that's really got a fullback in the game, or it could mean you have three wide receivers in the game because Andrews flexes out so well. And frankly, I think Hurst will be almost as good as Andrews in that respect, in his ability to flex out. Hurst probably is that, you know, just that in-between guy. He'll give you a little bit of blocking if that's what you want, you know, kind of like Max Williams did, and a little bit of receiving as well. Max Williams is a guy we didn't talk about here, but, you know, obviously he's no longer a Raven, but he was one of the guys who was used extensively in the backfield last year as a, you know, in that fullback role, even had a couple carries.
Yeah, and that's a great point. The flexibility that guys with skill sets like Andrews, like Hayden Hurst, what that allows you to do, because then, you know, at least in theory on paper, you know, you see what happens on the field, but at least on the chalkboard, what happens is if you want to split one of those guys out and a team wants to match up with nickel personnel, well, now we can run the ball, right? We can motion, we can shift into a different formation. And now, you know, we've got that lighter box and we've got a tight end, you know, on a DB potentially as a blocking matchup. And we like that. Or if you want to come out with base personnel, then we can flex that guy out and get him into the pattern and have him matched up with a linebacker or a safety who maybe not quite as athletic as that guy in Andrews or her. So that's really the flexibility. And really this goes back, I don't want to derail us. I'll try to keep it short, but this really goes back even in my mind to like Bill Belichick, Rob Gronkowski, Aaron Hernandez. That goes back, I really think, to those days where I think Belichick really saw the value of being able to go with 12 personnel a lot when you had tight ends who could do what those guys could do, who had the receiving ability, who were athletic who were mismatches, but then also could block in the running game. Obviously, Gronkowski was a very good blocker. Hernandez, not quite as much. But still, the flexibility that gave you, because you're trying to put yourself in a position that no matter how the defense responds, they're wrong, right? If they come out in nickel, we run the ball, they're wrong. They come out in base, we pass the ball, they're wrong. So I think he really sort of started to move in that direction. And you don't see a lot of other teams around the league do it as much. It's really 11 personnel league now, like I said. Yep. But the Ravens, you know, they might be taking a page out of that Belichick book of zagging when the rest of the league has zigged.
Well, the Ravens played 83% of their snaps in 2018 with five or more DBs on the field. So that gives you an idea of how often the other team is lining up with three receivers. And there are some other automatic situations where by down and distance you do it, but almost always the other team will have three wide receivers in the game when you're playing nickel or more defensive backs.
Yep.
Anyway, Michael, really appreciate this, and I hope people are going to like this episode and come up with some good questions for the defense. Josh, anything more for us?
No. What we'll do is we kind of snuck up on people with this episode. So on the next episode, we'll handle any offense or defense questions that come in for the mailbag instead of trying to separate out the mailbag this week.
Sounds good. I'll try and get a notification out there a little earlier. I'm sorry, guys. I know Garnett and Miggy are two great fans, and I'm glad they got it in that early.
Yeah, no, we're recording late on a Saturday night. It's a surprise to anyone. All right, so training camp is less than 2 weeks away. I'm sure you guys, what are you guys working on? What are you planning for Russell Street Report and all? Ken, you got anything in the can?
Yeah, I do have one piece that's coming. It's a historical piece on how the Ravens' use of a rotational defensive line has changed over the years. So it's a lot of fun putting this together, and I'll have that ready in the next week or so.
And I'm going to actually make a couple of trips out to a couple training camp practices and do a couple of write-ups for Russell Street Report. But in terms of stuff that's out there right now, I know you guys have had Dev on the show before Dev Pinchwa, but Dev and I did a couple pieces on Pernell McPhee and Shane Ray, a couple of video pieces that I think are still out there on Russell Street Report somewhere on the site. Those are really fun to really look at some video of a couple plays and break those down. And Dev is a great guy. So we had a lot of fun. So those are out there if people want to take a look.
All right. You're at Abukari on Twitter, Abukari, correct?
That is it. Only you and one other person has taken the educational opportunity to go out and see what that means. So.
It's absolutely fascinating if you want to watch that. It's also it's a little bit hard to find because it's not the exact name that's often given to the guy, but a West African explorer of note who may have been to Brazil before Columbus, right?
That's it. Yeah. And out of deference, you know, I didn't want to use the exact spelling, so I had to change it up a little bit. But yeah, you know, Google it. You know, I had an instructor who told me that one time. GTS, right? Google that. Well, this is a family show, so we won't do that. But GTS is what he recommends. That's right. Google that stuff, right? If there's something you don't know the answer to, Google that stuff.
Okay. Very good. Okay. I'm at Film Study Ravens. Josh at Josh Soroka.
Yeah, that's it. Nice and simple.
Okay. What's going on in 336, Josh?
You know what? I launched a new podcast that people can go subscribe to. It's called 336 Daily. It's a whole separate podcast feed in your podcast player. And it is mini episodes every weekday morning, like 10 to 15 minute episode that catches you up on whatever Oriole news happened the day before, night before, and gets you set for any water cooler talk. So you don't have to watch the Orioles and sit through some of these horrible games. You can listen to me in the morning, and I'll update you on the Andrew Cashner trade or whatever else is going on with the Orioles.
Okay, now Andrew Cashner has not yet been traded, correct? Although
he was traded on Saturday night.
I did not know that. Okay, now they're in. So what did the Orioles get for him?
Two 17-year-old Venezuelan baseball players from the Boston Red Sox.
Okay.
So kind of smart by Mike Elias, because we can't really judge him on whether this was a good or bad trade for 5 years from now. So everyone will forget about it by then.
All right. Very good. Josh, we'll be back in the next couple of days to do this other episode on the defense. Very similar. Please get your questions in for that. Anything else, Josh?
No, we're all good.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification. And they're satisfying to scratch, no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
At Lowe's, we're your go-to for great gardening values every day. That's why we've lowered our price on select bagged mulch, now starting at just $2.88 a bag. Mulch helps prevent weeds and retains moisture. And when you put it down around trees, shrubs, and flower beds, you'll see how beautiful it makes your outdoor space. Just in time to welcome back family and friends. Shop online and pick up in store. Lowe's, home to the best part of summer. Selection and product availability vary by location. While supplies last, U.S. only. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.